Good evening, everyone. My name is Kaku. I'm a priest and assistant teacher here at the Village Zendo. And I'm very pleased to be here and share the evening with you. So I've been reading a very, to me, intriguing book that I thought was titled Engaging Dogen. Dogen, as you may know, is pretty much seen as the founder of our brand of Buddhism, the Soto Shu of Buddhism in Japan. And so his biggest writing is what's called the Shobogenzo. And the Shobogenzo is Japanese. We translate it as the treasury of the true Dharma eye. So it's a rather large work and kind of the foundation for what we think is the way to go in Soto Zen Buddhism. So Dogen's our founder, and I, from the very beginning, when I first heard someone speak about Dogen and first began reading his work, I was extremely impressed and moved. So much so that I named my latest dog Dogen, which is the highest compliment I could pay to Dogen. But as I looked at this book in preparation for this evening, I realized that the title was called Engaging Dogen's Zen. So the difference between engaging Dogen and engaging Dogen's Zen seems to me to be significant in the sense that to engage Dogen's Zen is to really engage his thought. And that is, in fact, what this book is about. It's about engaging, encountering, and making the most out of Dogen's thought in his writing. The point of the book, however, I think, is more about engaging Dogen. Because to engage Dogen is to dig through the words to find the man that he was, the man that he is, as the writer of these words for us today. So, in any case, when I started to look back and discovered that it's Dogen's Zen, I was surprised at how blithely I had ignored that, having read the book, you know, almost daily for the last 10 days or so. We may come back to this issue of what's the difference between engaging Dogen versus engaging Dogen's Zen. This particular book, comprised of several essays by different leading Dogen scholars, mostly American, but including some people from Ireland and Japan. And each essay deals with a section of a book that is called, in Japanese, Kyokai Shisoji, The Meaning of Practice Realization in the Soto Fellowship, or Shusogi for short. Shusogi continues to bring excerpts from Dogen's Shobogenzo, the big book. And so it's a condensation. And it appeared at the end of the 19th century as a response from the Soto school of Zen to the to many different changes that were going on in Japan that people were afraid of Soto Zen losing its power, losing membership, and you know the things that go with prestige and status and it's a concern you know all institutions have at some point. But But people of that time, actually it turns out lay people more than the priests, decided that they would glean through Shobogenzo and pull out the most crucial elements of Dogen's philosophy. So it's a collection that in Japanese was written by lay people and not the priests, not the, you know, official teachers, which is interesting, but they were all scholars. And this book then got translated into English fairly recently by people, most of whom are teachers in America. As I said, you know, there's one from Ireland and someone else from Japan, but they all teach in universities here in America. So the striking thing about this book is, for anybody who's who knows anything about Dogen, the most striking thing about this book is it never mentions Zazen. As those of you acquainted with Soto Zen, and particularly with Dogen, Zazen was seen by him as the key, the gate, the front gate, you know, by which to enter into the full meaning of Zen practice. And so for people, you know, 70 years ago, to have compiled a number of excerpts from his Shobogenzo that entirely disregarded this is quite striking. And so that's number one, is that this book comes from this this history. For those of you, you know, somewhat new to practice, we consider our Zazen to be of the essence of the practice, without which you can't really get what Zen practice has to offer. So it's very much high, you know, high up there on the priorities in terms of our practice. And so to have a book written about Dogen's writings that excludes all references to Zazen is weird at best. So yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Zazen is simply our style of meditation. So I'm sorry I didn't clarify that. So it just means sitting for your meditation practice, and one of the main methods of sitting in meditation for us is simply sitting and not without any intellectual assignment or purpose or goal, but simply sitting. And that's called shikantaza. So you can see the meditation aspect is extremely, well, it's essential to our practice as we understand it nowadays anyway. So the writers actually in this particular book formed a group that is called Ko-Zen. And the Ko refers to the fact that each of these people is both a scholar and a practitioner of Zen. So they are picking up this sometimes distinction between doing meditation and engaging in the academic or cognitive intellectual exploration of the meanings of Dogen's writings. So it's a group that is founded and formed by people who are not just scholars of Dogen's writings and other Buddhist writings, but they are also people who practice and adopt it as their own faith, as their own religious practice. So it's in that sense that they call themselves Co-Zen. And obviously that arose out of a context in which people were suspect about scholars who were intellectually brilliant, but, you know, in terms of really understanding what Zen was about, they were out to lunch. So it's so we have this weird situation of these scholars who want to insist on their Zen practice, as well as be responsible academically, saying we're going to look at this book that left out the piece that we want to include. Is that clear? So that's what this book's about. And why is that important for us? Because Dogen, to my mind, is a combination of Shakespeare and Einstein and I don't know who else, but his writing is powerful enough that that's enough to occupy people for most of their lives. And then we add meditation. So in this book, we have two historically important moments in the history of Zen. The publication of Shusoji as an effort to preserve Soto Zen Buddhism in late 19th century Japan, and the current republication in English with commentaries from contemporary scholars whose aim is to be faithful both to the academic appreciation of Dogen and to assert with equal determination the value and centrality of personal practice, meaning meditation, that they see as essential for embodying the deepest insights and transformation of which the Dharma is capable and we are capable. So the controversy and why it's important to us today is this. It deftly presents key passages from the Shobogenzo in order to make Soto Zen more accessible and popular to Meiji era Japanese, with this noteworthy feature that it completely ignores Dogen's emphasis on Zazen. Dogen's initial driving question for his spiritual quest was, if all beings are originally created with Buddha nature, then why do we have to practice? And his answer, ultimately, the resolution to this question for him, his breakthrough answer was that practice and realization are one and inseparable. So if you want enlightenment, one of the things that you need to do, according to Dogen, is do Zazen. Not that we can do Zazen with a goal like that, but that'll be another talk another time. Shusogi was written by lay practitioners who did not live a monastic life, and therefore could not be expected to design their lives around Zazen. You know, when we go on retreat, we may get up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to begin doing meditation, and then do it again, or later morning or noontime, and then again in the evening. We do quite a bit of the meditation. That's how important it is for us. Dogen's highest and most profound realization, therefore, the unity of practice and realization, was just ignored by the writers of this particular book, because it was too inconvenient for lay people. In our time, Zen scholars who want to correct the imbalance by directly stipulating and reclaiming Dogen's claim regarding the unity of practice and realization have founded this group called Co-Zen. We can't overestimate the importance of this issue of the unity of practice and realization. For the Dharma to be completely implanted in our body, mind, heart, selves, Zazen remains the front gate of practice. And when we take the Zazen posture, we are already in a position of realization. Why? In other words, it doesn't matter in a way whether you are here for the first time or you've been here for, you know, decades like some of us, it doesn't matter. When you sit, what are the instructions? The instructions are to sit and to let your thoughts arise and let them go. Just don't focus on your thoughts. That's the basic instruction. Pay attention to your breath as a way of grounding yourself. But basically, what you're doing while you're sitting there is letting thoughts arise and letting them go. Very simple. To appreciate how important that is, think back the days when you were just beginning to write. Perhaps you were, you know, in high school or college and you were given a writing assignment. And I don't know whether your experience was like this, but for me, I would write and I would throw it all away. I'd get so frustrated because I didn't like anything that I was saying. And I was saying a lot of garbage. And after, you know, 20 years or so, I learned that the garbage was the necessary thing that had to be put out there in order to get to the good stuff. So that's what Zazen is. Zazen is like this writing that you do that is, you know, in your mind so that it can finally settle down to be nothing or almost nothing. That's what Zazen is like. And so, you know, you be in a conversation with someone and you realize this person is very boring. You know, they're just talking on and on and on and on, and it's not going anywhere. And not only that, but I'm not getting any feelings from them or for them about it all. And then, you know, if you keep listening, you know, after 15, 20, 30, 40 minutes, whatever it is, they hit something that you realize all of a sudden they become alive. We do that, you know, without quite thinking of it because it's embarrassing. You know, we do that in all our conversations. You know, we talk a lot of bullshit that seems unrelated to anything, but evidently we have to get through that in order to get to something else that's more scintillating or just alive. So Zazen helps us do that with our whole life. It helps us get to the essential, because we're in the business of throwing out what's not essential by simply letting thoughts rise and letting them go. So it's a very powerful process, and it can be life-changing. Because what are we doing? We're sitting there facing whatever comes up. Freud was not the first one to say that the stuff that comes up in your mind is a lot of garbage. You know, people who studied Buddhism realized that a long, long time ago. And so Zazen is a process for us to find out what's essential, what's important to us. David Loy is one of the writers in this book, and he's a person who has come and spoken here at Village Zendo. He put it this way. He put it in terms of karma. Karma, as you know, is basically the relationship between cause and effect. Karma basically says, this is because that is. That is because this is. That's pretty much it. He goes on to say, attachment to karma, attachment, in other words, to things working out a certain way, is what binds us to the runaround of samsara. Samsara is the world as we experience it, our lives as we experience them, in their disconnected and sometimes very painful and draining ways. It's in contrast sometimes to what we call nirvana, which depends on who you are talking, whose words you're referring to, but The simplest breakdown is nirvana is about heaven and samsara is about, you know, the nitty-gritty of hell. And some people design their whole practice to have one and not the other. In Zen, we don't make that distinction. But Loy is talking about holding on to our karma to, in the sense of wanting things to turn out a certain way in our lives. The term karma literally means action, deed, or work, he says. But it also means to the object or intention of an action. Attachment to karma means clinging to or even identifying with the consequences of our actions. So how many people plan their lives with an open agenda and don't really have any goals about what they're aiming for? For us, planning mostly means having some goals and expecting certain outcomes, and we see it as a virtue to work toward achieving what our conscious goals are. That's another version of karma, as Loy is talking about it. When karma is simply allowed to be, in other words, when you let things unfold as they do, which is only possible from the standpoint of a non-ego, in other words, if we're not invested in what the outcome is and we're ready to deal with whatever the outcome is, we discover a certain freedom. And we discover also the Buddha Dharma, which permeates all existence. So the self that understood karma primarily in relation to itself is a self that is bound up in the delusion of ignorance and therefore unable to realize its fundamentally awakened existence. So what does that mean? When we are caught up in wanting things to come out our way and we have an idea of what that should be, we set ourselves up to be defensive and perhaps, you know, on some level aggressive to try to make the outcome what we want it to be. And the outcome or the aggression may be directed against someone else. It may be directed against ourselves. It may be directed against an institution or simply life itself. But we build up the accumulation of resentments when things don't go our way. So it's a very basic human kind of problem. And Loy underscores the fact that in fact, everything generates karma. So we're always creating different conditions. So I'm going to move on to what Dogen calls the true Dharma eye. Hakuin says, when we turn inward and prove our true nature, that the true self that is no self, our own self is no self, we go beyond ego and past clever words. So we have this terminology in Zen thought, which is that there is no such thing as a self. This comes from one of the principles of the Buddha's enlightenment, that nothing exists by itself. Nothing is separate from everything else. All things are interconnected, and nothing comes to be without being in relation to other things. So there's no separate self, and it sometimes is translated as no self. It's one of the amazing things about Zazen that as we learn to settle into our practice, we learn to let go of our desire to understand, to know, to figure things out, and know the answers. As we sit with ourselves in meditation, we learn to notice and at the same time to let go of our own thoughts, our own feelings, the teachings, even our questions. we no longer need to possess or grab or grasp the Dharma, the teaching, the truth, or the answer. We find as we let go in Zazen, in Zen meditation, as we let go, we're able to see our true nature as not having an ego investment in the outcome. And that makes us open to see just what's there. That's all. To see things just as they are. David Loy concludes, Buddha nature can be grasped by the mind and elucidated in language, but at the same time, it cannot be fully actualized except through practice, realization. In other words, through doing meditation, in addition to other things. He says, philosophizing or thinking about Buddha Dharma is a form of practice, which is precisely why Dogen was so attentive to his own form of writing and his teaching. But paradoxically, from the standpoint of his Zen, such activity is fundamentally empty. Buddha nature or original awakening can only be actualized in, through, and as practice. So what does this mean? It means that our freedom comes from letting go mentally as we do meditation. As we let go, we find the capacity to see things as they are. And that gives us a freedom that we don't have when we're busy trying to control things. So letting go in meditation is a practice in learning not to control, but to let go and to just be aware. Awareness is the key. Therefore, Dogen says in Fukan Zazengi, put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward, looking at ourselves. Body and mind of themselves will drop away and your original face will be manifest. This face, Loy says, is the non-rational, non-discursive mind that is able to grasp paradox while at the same time letting it be, not trying to explain it. This is a great freedom we find when we are in conflict with someone or within ourselves. The conflicts arise because we think things ought to be a certain way. And when we can simply let them be as they are, then a whole new world opens up and we find ourselves with the freedom to do what's needed for the situation. This is the moment, Loy says, of the horizontal and vertical intersection, the moment of the sudden realization of what has always been originally true. So I began this talk by noting my misreading of the title, which is Engaging Dogen's Zen. I prefer my version, Engaging Dogen. For when we engage Dogen, we become Dogen. We take on Dogen's, as he says, bones and marrow. We become intimate with him, and when we become intimate with Dogen, we become Shakyamuni. Shakyamuni is another name for the Buddha. When we become the Buddha, we become simply ourselves with our own no-self true nature. May your life go well.